Today on Doomed! The Nazis and white supremacists have returned for Unite the Right 2. It was yesterday, on August 12th, 2018. And, well, let's just say, folks, I don't think there'll be a Unite the Right 3. Joining me to discuss this today is Kelly Weil of The Daily Beast. She was on the ground in Charlottesville, in D.C., for both the pre-Unite the Right 2 events and Unite the Right 2 yesterday. And she'll be giving us that first-hand account. And let me pull her up right now. And Kelly, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks for having me.
I'm pulling us up on the feed. One second. Sorry. There we are. All right, cool. So, Kelly, you went down to Charlottesville first on, what was it, Saturday, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And they were like, I remember last year, before the first Unite the Right rally, there was that, I think it's almost become even, you know, the visuals from that have even become more like, that's sort of the visual that carries over more than anything that happened the next day, I think, last year. And that was those tiki torches being lit and these guys marching, what was it, on the University of, what was the college campus this was on?
The University of Virginia, and they had this tiki torch march, and they were supposedly defending a Confederate statue. In fact, they were just terrorizing locals. There's just horrifying video and audio of this mob of white supremacists circling some locals and some college students who are just like, who just came out there out of a sense of obligation, you know, to stand up against these people. And suddenly they just found themselves trapped there. There were no police. There was really no intervention. It was a really horrifying thing to watch from abroad or, you know, afar. And it's frankly amazing that it didn't go worse, although it was pretty bad.
Right. You know, it's, you know, looking back, you know, you just look at those pictures and all I could see is like, you know, to use some of their terminology, you know, a bunch of beta cucks. you know, these guys look nerdy as hell, and not like the cool nerdy, like nerdy as hell. And they're chanting, "You will not replace us." And it's like, I don't know. I don't think it's going to take very much to replace you guys. I mean, but, you know, going back and actually transporting yourself to last year, it was intense.
Totally. I wasn't there, but I've been the part of this year talking with people who are there, local activists, survivors, and I don't think I can like overstate how serious it was for them, just the physical trauma and the mental trauma, and just the, you know, there's this idea that some people have pushed that, well, these Nazis came from out of town. And it's true. James Fields Jr., the guy who drove a car into a crowd of people and killed a woman, was from Ohio. But a lot of the racism there and the white supremacy, those were homegrown people. Jason Kessler, the organizer of Unite the Right, is from Charlottesville. Richard Spencer, well-known, not a neo-Nazi. He's a neo-Nazi. He, you know, went to the University of Virginia. So there's a lot of local bigotry that was really, really just kind of came to the surface there that night. I think that's still really something locals are struggling with.
Right. And I mean, excuse me. Right. You know, when you say, like, literally you brought up, like, when you say survivors, last year someone died at these events. You know, Heather Hare, you know, Hare, I think, last name's Hare.
Mm-hmm.
She became like this year. She became like the rallying cry for the counter protests, and you know it's something to watch actually, because her mother came out, you know, after the events, and really this whole year there's been interviews with her, and then they spoke with her just these past few days, and it's not to jump ahead from that, you know, from what we're going to talk about chronologically, but to watch her mother, Susan Breaux, talk about it. It's amazing to watch someone speak about their daughter with the realization that she's something bigger than just her daughter now. And usually that's not something that that happens, and rightfully so. Like, you know, a family member should be under pressure to have to give up their family member, let alone their child, to like the public to use in that way. But she seems to really understand it and feel like her daughter would want, you know, her memory to put the focus on, you know, the actual events, the counter protests, mm-hmm. and the anti-fascist action that's been going on, not just this past weekend, but really since the rise of these white supremacists and Nazis who've always been here, but, you know, in the past few years have felt the safety of the current administration, and really just, I guess, the feeling over in society at large to just, I guess, make themselves more public.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that is what always floors me, looking back on that day and everything that's happened since, is just with all of Charlottesville, I think, but especially this family, they didn't ask for this. In fact, locals were, you know, going to city council months before Unite the Right saying, look at the people who are coming. They have a documented history of violence. Please shut this down. The city let it happen. So with that in mind, so many locals came out, including Heather Heyer, who, you know, anti-racist, but also just a person. She lived down the street, and she was killed by a man from Ohio. I mean, the abject cruelty of that is, it's unfair. I know that's a minor point in all of this, and her mother, I think, has just done really heroic work, speaking on, you know, on her daughter's death. Which that family has gone through so much. Her mother, Susan Bro, spoke to one of my colleagues at the end of last year and said that they've had to hide Heather's grave because they don't want it defaced by white supremacists. But her mother has done such a good job just, you know, while honoring her daughter, saying this horrible thing happened, but it's part of a wider context of, you know, white supremacy in Charlottesville and elsewhere. And just to put herself out there like that is, I mean, it's so courageous, and it really stuns me every time I see her stand up like that.
Right. You know, it's, you know, and not to, you know, it takes, you know, not every parent, you know, of that generation, anyone of that age, that, you know, not to, you know, downplay, you know, the many leftist and anti-fascist activists from that generation. But, you know, it's not every day you see, like, you know, a cliche mom and think to yourself, like, oh, she's going to understand what's going on here. Like, she's going to get what's going on. And to see that, and she's so well-spoken about it. Like, she just knows. There's no, like, questioning in her mind what her daughter would want. And she's just so forward about it. And it's, you know, when someone like that comes forward, it's like, you know, you know, I don't know how you don't feel other than, like, you know, this is we're gonna win, you know, in the bigger sense. These guys, these Nazis and white supremacists and fascists, you know, all you fascists bound to lose, you know, like, that's just how the song goes.
Yeah, I mean, there's kind of a little bit of, like, a cliche. It's a little reductive, but, you know, you see it at the Women's March. It's like, love trumps hate. And, like, sometimes I'm like, okay, well, let's talk about, you know, like, the structural issues other than, you know, person-to-person hate and, you know, structural inequality. But, like, in that instance, and with, I think, so many people in Charlottesville that I spoke to, it's, I mean, it just is active, you know, giving of love and supporting each other and helping each other understand the structural issues at play and driving each other to court dates and the physical therapists, because they're still dealing with, you know, financial and medical and legal fallout from that weekend. And by and large, I think a lot of the rest of the country has moved on.
Right. Right. So let's start with your first day there on Saturday. Now, from what I saw, actually, it seems like, I don't know if this is what happened where you were, but it seems like there was some violence on Saturday, because I've seen pictures of a college student who got like attacked or something. I'm not sure if you've seen these photos.
I I'm not sure. So I got there in the afternoon, and I know during the day there was a bit of a scuffle. Some anti-fascists demonstrated at the site of Heather Heyer's memorial, where she died. I think there was a bit of a confrontation with police. As far as a college student, I can't speak to that. I didn't see it. But what I did see there was that it was on just total police lockdown. It's if you've ever been to Charlottesville, it's a really gorgeous like college town, really like small brick streets. It's really pretty, and it was just several layers of police barricades at every street entrance to get in. Heavy police patrol, state police. They're the I don't know police terminology, but they're the things that look like borderline tanks,
Oh, right.
yeah. So, and I know quite a
Love
few people.
that militarization of our local police departments, yeah.
Totally, yeah. It's an incredibly cool and normal thing to have driving around. And yeah, and I know I asked quite a few people about that response, and I got really kind of a mixed answer from a lot of people. Because one thing that happened last year was that although there were all these police agencies, one, they were not communicating well with each other, and two, they just sort of let things happen. They sort of stood down. They didn't really keep the sides separated. There's footage of them watching, a beat down and being like, darn.
Right.
They didn't do too much. So this year, to use, I think two people I spoke to said they overreacted, or at least they calibrated in the exact opposite direction where they shut everything down. And you can say, well, okay, that makes it a little bit safer. And, maybe to that end, certainly no one's going to drive a car down the street again. But some other people I spoke to just sort of said, keep in mind the broader issues we have here with like police brutality, with racism in policing in Charlottesville, where something like 80% of stop and frisks are for people of color, but only 20% of people in Charlottesville are people of color. I believe those are the statistics. I can check, but it is, it's a structural issue there. So one thing people said to keep in mind is, okay, well, there's a lot of police here. Think what that really means for people who might be more affected by that presence. I talked to someone who said, yeah, I just got pulled over for no reason this morning. I was just like in my car and I got, stopped and searched. So I think it's a really fine point there, to figure out what the ideal response is and, how authorities can keep this community safe without really furthering the entrenched issues that led to last year.
Right. Isn't that something though? Like, it's not surprising, but isn't that something where, like, we're forced to pick and choose between the cops looking on, probably deep down inside some of them rooting for the white supremacists, and then on the other end of the spectrum, when they get criticized for not doing anything, they basically lock down this the town to the point where, the marginalized groups who live in that town are the ones who can't drive around without getting pulled over and stopped and bothered by the police.
Yeah, it's really tricky. And I think I attended a service on Saturday, just sort of a year, a 1 year anniversary reflection and healing. And they had workshops afterwards, which I think were really neat. Some were just emotional support, but some were a lot more radical, led by, a subset of clergy and secular faith leaders. And like one was about, okay, how do we disinvest from the police? How do we make ourselves more accountable to each other? How do we do, restorative justice, things like that. And just sort of like challenging the systems where, like you said, there's a lot of white supremacist law enforcement, just you see statistically, that happens quite a lot. So I think I'm sure it's an ongoing conversation and an ongoing process there where they just try and figure out what they can do to dismantle these systems that led to the violence last year.
Right. You just brought up the clergy, and whenever I think of the clergy when it comes to the sort of the type of clergy who go out there, the priests, pastors, what have you, who go out there when these sort of events happen, and then they go out to counter protest with your, you know, the other protesters. I just love those images. You know, I guess the cornball in me comes out, and I just love, you know, the seeing, like, you know, these, you know, the Antifa guys with the and gals with the bandanas over their face, and then right alongside them is, like, in full, you know, garb, I don't know what to call it, is like a priest, and they're like together, and it's, you know, I think that's a great, you know, if I love those, like, cinematic dramatic moments. They make me feel inside. I don't know what else to put it.
Yeah, no, a lot of clergy are pretty rad. I'm not pushing religion, but yeah, they're on Saturday night at UVA, same spot where the Nazis had the torchlit march last year. There was a huge, you know, demonstration, and a lot of people, there were clergy. And there was this one point where they just sort of linked arms because it looked like there might have been some standoff with police. Turned out pretty low key. And they just kind of linked arms, like, what are you going to do? You're going to beat down a priest. Now, that has happened. In fact, I heard last year police were not so forgiving to faith leaders. But I think it's just really, when you talk about, like, being a good ally, and if you have a set of privileges that, like, make you more resilient to police, make you more resilient to white supremacist violence, you know, putting yourself maybe on the front line. And that is, like, if that is not ever a good example of it, is being that, you know, a male priest, just, you know, robes on and just standing there and, like, protecting people. I think it's so cool.
It definitely is. Like, it just is something that's like, you know, it's one of those things, like, you know, if there was a movie being made about this stuff, like, that would be a shot, and people would be like, yeah, maybe that's a little bit too dramatic. Does that really happen? And then it's like, no, it totally does.
Yeah.
Right. So it seems like Saturday mostly was like Charlottesville, I guess, coming together to show solidarity this past Saturday. You know, to sort of in remembrance of the events of last year.
Yeah, absolutely. And there were plenty of actions that happened on Sunday. I just couldn't be there. But Saturday, there were meetings in churches, you know, just sort of like secular healing ceremonies, that kind of thing. And then there was in the evening this march on the University of Virginia, which was a lot more radical. A lot of students, it was organized by students, and a lot of their demands were about, you know, accountability and policing, and also holding the University of Virginia accountable for their role last year. Students voiced their concerns about this upcoming rally to the school, which didn't do a whole lot. In fact, maybe not anything. And then some people who were injured on the grounds of the University of Virginia went to the University of Virginia hospital and are still either paying those bills, or some of them have been hounded by, like, debt collectors because they couldn't pay the bills to the University of Virginia for the violence that happened on that campus. So that was those were the student demands about, you know, more police accountability, better response from the University of Virginia, and more broader demands, just calling for more transparency with the school, things that would make it easier for students of color, low-income students, things that would really just sort of make Charlottesville a more welcoming place, and to kind of get rid of that entrenched white supremacy that they're still grappling with.
Right, like a complete counter to what was going on just 365 days, and before that even, and throughout probably the past year as well. Like, you know, it's been a long road, I'm sure, to get to this point. And it's, you know, it's unfortunate that something like what happened last year had to happen for that to I guess, wake up the school and the community. But, you know, it is what it is, I guess.
Yeah, totally. I mean, there were always a lot of activist groups, but, you know, I was speaking with a Black Lives Matter leader on Saturday, and she said the thing that's changed the most is just seeing people pack city council meetings from here on out. And just, you know, really, there's this pretty, I think, urgent call to hold people to account and to pave a better path forward in the future.
Right. You know, I'm sort of that person that tries to look on the bright side of things. And, you know, if, you know, Do I prefer that Donald Trump wasn't the president? Of course. But being that Donald Trump's the president, should we totally, like, take this opportunity to push, democratic socialism and push the whole country further left? Absolutely.
All so, right, accelerationism. Let's go.
Right. I mean, would I prefer, we could have gotten, I prefer Hillary Clinton being the president right now, but if we're going to live in this timeline, then let's do it, you know?
Yep.
So let's jump to yesterday. And so I want to just, because I don't want to forget about it, because last time you came on the show, you spoke about this fun story where Matthew Heinberg, whatever his last name is, his love triangle with his own extended family members. And that's a fun story because as serious as, Nazis and white supremacists should be taken, when they do have moments like that, we should all take that opportunity to demean them and laugh at them and make them feel horrible. So this time around, I love this story. There's two things here of Jason Kessler just being a buffoon. Well, there's many things where Jason Kessler's a buffoon, but there's
he's
two.
He's also about 5'1". I didn't realize that until I saw him in person yesterday. Really? Anyway.
He's shorter than me. That's a hard thing to do. I'm about Ben Shapiro's height, so. So little Jason Kessler, not many people I could call that, is there's two things I saw. One is the police try to explain to him that he can't take these flags on these poles into the area where they've been granted to actually hold their little rally. And so he takes the, so they're telling him to take the flags off the poles and, they can't bring the poles in. So he, for some reason, is under the assumption that they just don't want the flags on the poles and then they could bring them both in separately. I know it's just some stupid little thing, but what an idiot.
I think the internet has just given us this totally poisoned, debate mentality. It's like, if I take the flag off the pole, then, by your logic, I don't have a flag. It's like, buddy, come on. he's being afforded so much police protection and, liberties to have this dumb thing that no one wants. Take your flag off the pole. We've historically seen Kessler's crew use flagpoles to, stab people and beat people. We know the game here. And so does he. Just take the flag off.
Right. There's a lot of right-wing ideology in our militarized police force, but the whole by your logic thing isn't one of them that they abide by.
you can't draw a logic diagram with a police officer being actually
right
hero.
Yeah.
Anyway,
no. Right. And then the next thing I saw that I want to make sure we get to is that apparently he had so first of all, this is something we should definitely hit upon. That's not one of these silly asides. The union that drives these buses that... And why don't you take this? Because you know this better than I do, I'm sure.
So, there's a lot of discussion about how to keep Unite the Right separate from protesters, from everyday people. And one strategy that was suggested early on was that, we'll give them three separate... three reserved cars on the metro train, which they took from... in Virginia. And the union, the DC Metro Transport Unit, union, just they said hell no. They leaked the plans to the media. They said we are absolutely not participating in this.
I'm sorry, you broke up a little bit. Where were the buses taking them from? From Charlottesville to?
Well, the buses were scheduled to pick them up from, I'm not exactly sure where, that was not disclosed, and drive them to a train station in Vienna, Virginia, which would, they'd get, an escorted train into into DC. So if we back up a little bit, not even the buses happened because their bus driver bailed on them and they had to drive in. Yeah. It's a brain geniuses, really, really good communication and follow through. But so they did make it in. And initially there had been this plan to give them three reserved cars on the train. Well, when you have about 20 people, you don't need three reserved cars. You need maybe a quarter of a car. So what ended up happening was they got a huge police escort into the station. They wouldn't let anyone else in. Eventually, they, you know, had a few of them in a car, a few media, a whole bunch of police, and that was it. That was, you know, that was the kickoff to their rally, which was supposed to be this huge thing, as, you know, a few assholes in a protected subway car.
Right. Now, before we get into that rally and the events surrounding that, I just want to hit upon the what you touched upon. What I heard a little bit more about it was that apparently there was, whether this was an actual bus driver or not, or just someone who somehow got Kessler's number and was trolling him, apparently someone kept him on the phone or kept him waiting, thinking that there was a driver showing up at some point, and the guy just would tell him that, oh yeah, I got pulled over by this police force and I'm being, you know, held here, and I'm on my way though, I'll get there. And so they were waiting and waiting, and this guy just basically kept leading Kessler on. And I just find that to be funny, that he would even, you know, if you have an event, buddy, little event planning 101 for the fascists out there. If you've planned an event, you get yourself there regardless of whether your prearranged bus service has gotten there in time. You just find another way. You don't wait for this guy. He doesn't care about your event. So there you go. A little
Yeah, I mean they were always screwed on the buses because they kept trying to reserve regular charter buses, and those companies just kept denying them, saying, "Hey, we're not going to drive you in. Like, we don't like you." If you look at like leaked or not even leaked, they showed up in court documents, emails from Kessler and one of his followers. One of his followers is like, "Well, maybe we can get like my friend's dad's church bus to drive us in." Like, they had no allies going into this.
It's clear to me now that what Gab needs to do is they need to pivot to an Uber-esque bus service app for all your white supremacist rally needs.
Totally. I mean, there is clearly a burgeoning market for that. Yeah, Gab is looking under fire right now. So who knows? It's a whole new market.
Right. And once the Uber thing is set sail, I'm sure they could pivot to the scooters that we're seeing in San Francisco. But scooters for white supremacists, obviously.
Totally, yeah. The scooters in San Francisco, if you stand on them without paying for them, they start shouting at you. So like, if you stand on them and like don't shout like the 14 words or something, it'll be like, "Sir, please get off." Yeah,
Right.
it's a concept.
Right. I think it's the new way for them. I mean, there's clearly a market there, and that's the route Gab should take. Now, speaking of the 14 words, I saw this photo of this woman who still unidentified, that had the 1488 tattooed across her arm. And I don't know if you saw her, but I have to question, like, listen, I know white supremacists and Nazis and white nationalists and racists and however these people, whatever level on the scale of racism they want to place themselves, are all around us, even here in New York City, in the most wokest of little boroughs, in anywhere you could find, in the most diverse place, I'm sure, to Staten Island, where they run rampant, I'm sure. But they usually, have unless they've come out of prison, the swastika is under their shirt, or on their butt cheek. This lady, where is she hiding? Where is she living that she's got 1488 on her arm right there? Her whole arm. I mean.
It was huge, but I can do you one better with that same rally. Is that so she had it on her arm, but you can wear long sleeve shirts, I guess, for your entire life if you renounce like neo-Nazism. One of the guys marching right next to Kessler just had a 14 face tattoo, just right by his eyeball. I'm like, I mean, I don't know how you do you turn that into like a snowflake or something?
Right.
Like, how do you cover that up?
Right, but for me that's like a quintessential, prison tattoos. Maybe this
That's
guy was in
true.
prison, so it's like, it's you see someone like that, you question like, are they still a racist maybe? Because some people, a lot of these guys come out of prison and realize they don't need the hierarchy of the white power groups in prison to protect them, and they actually realize that shit is bad. And there's lots of nice stories where, and I do think actually, I think we should separate the true believers, like your Richard Spencers, your Kesslers, your people who there is no, there's, you shouldn't be. Like, these are the people that you punch in the face, and society should place an A on there, a scarlet letter on them or something. But I've brought this up on the show many times. There's, you know, young people who especially, but, you know, people anywhere who get sucked into this world and are taken advantage of. And, you know, as long as, you know, I do think, obviously, some people fall too deep, and they also should be just thrown in with the Kesslers and the Spencers and the Lucian, whatever his name is, from who just got booted from Gateway Pundit. Yeah,
that's right. How do you get booted from Gateway Pundit anyway?
Right. But you know, there are people, I think, I don't think this woman with the 1488 tattoo is one of them, but there are some people who I think are, and again, like I mentioned, we've seen some of these videos of people who've turned and changed. There are some people who I think just need to be shown that they're being taken advantage of.
Yeah, I mean, there's like, there are a lot of de-radicalization programs. I've heard some criticisms of them, but I mean, the fact is, with a lot of these folks, like, they've come into this backwards, you know. They probably don't know many people of color, or, you know, it just, I think a lot of it's, you know, a poverty of information. That said, like, when you start talking about, well, what's the priority, like, you know, immediately protecting people of color, you know, people who'd be targeted by them, or de-radicalizing it. It's like you protect the people and then you go through the de-radicalization stuff.
Right.
But definitely there's very much a history of that. What I think is interesting is we're seeing like a lot of young racists right now who come into it via, you know,
YouTube.
Yes.
YouTube.
That algorithm is terrifying.
It is the most undercovered. Everyone focuses on Facebook and Twitter and every other social media platform and website, and the focus on Daily Stormer and InfoWars, but InfoWars is part of it when they were on YouTube. Mm-hmm. But you know, the YouTube culture, and someone needs to really, if I guess I will have to take the to do this myself, if no one does it, someone is going to need to write or do a movie or a video or something on how this stuff has festered on YouTube. And unlike anywhere else, it sucks people in so deep that it is incredible to watch. Because it is just the ultimate culmination of the platform of YouTube and the medium of video and live streaming, and just the personality of these web culture guys like a Sargon of Akkad and a Count Dankula, whatever the fuck his stupid name is. Like all these guys who come across as edgy, but are just really just sad, pathetic losers. You know, these free speech warriors who espouse about social justice warriors. And, you know, their main thing to suck these kids in are harping on movies and video games and television shows. And then little by little, they start pushing the more political radicalization of the culture wars and the racist and sexist and misogynistic and homophobic and transphobic bullshit. I'm sorry if I'm going on a monologue here, but, you know, it is something that angers me so much. And, you know, I question if I should even be using this. I'm not even, most of my listeners by far, it's not even close, download the podcast, because I really do think that's how most people on the left and most progressives are, that's where they take in their media, from Chapo to the Majority Report to the Young Turks, even though they do have a big YouTube audience. They're the outliers on the left, I would say. But, you know, the right has taken the live streaming, video, YouTube culture, and that's the one area on, like, the tech world that they've really are way ahead of the left on. You know, there's no doubt about it that is their world, and they are sucking kids into it via YouTube.
Absolutely. I mean, like, there's this very insidious and very well done sort of entryist idea there, where they have, you know, they can make some pop culture thing that kids are interested in. And a lot of this is also cloaked in irony. Like, so there's always this level of plausible deniability. So you mentioned Count Dankula, who is best known for making his dog a Nazi. Like, ugh. Like, out of all the indefensible things, like, don't make your dog a Nazi, for God's sake. But, you know, he taught his dog how to do, you know, the Heil salute. And they always have like this layer of irony to sort of protect them when people are like, hey man, that's really fucked up. They're like, what? Is this a dog? It's a joke. He's not Hitler. And I think that's like really effective when you start talking with kids. It's this, you know, you're a teen and rebellious and, you know, it's you like that kind of humor. I get it. But it's a very effective medium for really gross ideology, which a lot of it just comes from hard-baked white nationalists who spend a lot of time thinking about how they can push this thing. If you look at a lot of 4chan and like Discord groups are just talking, they're like making memes and being like, how can we red pill the libs today? And like, yeah, a lot of them do work. And I think YouTube is just, it has so much to account for right now, and that it gives these guys a platform, and then the algorithm within just sort of, you know, leads you to the next thing and the next thing and the next thing. And okay, case in point, literally 45 minutes before this interview, a researcher was like, hey, can you find me the audio for this thing you referenced, really like hardcore like neo-Nazi stuff,
right?
And I'm like, oh damn, like, because I found it on SoundCloud and was actually right on Gab for a bit. I couldn't find it on either, like it was gone even from Gab. I'm like, right, man, where can I get this for her? I'm like, oh, YouTube. And there it was,
right?
That easy.
I thought you were gonna say like you were gonna have to say like, can you give me 6 hours to rewatch their 6-hour live stream they do every single night to find where it was? Because, you know,
yeah,
because you know, that's another thing, I think, because, you know, Milo Yiannopoulos, when he got booted off Twitter, which was where he was doing most of his you know, this really where he was making a name for himself, pretty much. His play after Twitter, and not to give him any ideas, was to go to Facebook instead of YouTube, which I think actually was the wrong play for him. Because, listen, Facebook, of course, has a huge audience, and he's got something like over 1 million, probably close to 2 million likes on Facebook. But still, he's out of the news cycle. He's out of the broader discussion. And that's because people go on Facebook, and they'll share links or whatever. But what do you have them for? The 5 minutes they take, if even that, to read one of the stories you write, in Milo's case, on Dangerous.com? Ooh. Like, on YouTube, you know, you have a guy like, I can never remember his name, but that guy with the long hair, and he always streams without a shirt on, but he wears like a leather jacket.
It's like Stixhammer 66.
Yeah, 66, right. And like, he's going on for like hours and hours and hours, almost every night, just ranting and raving, just like an unconscious stream of his thoughts, subconscious, whatever the what I'm trying to say here. But, and you know, that's as dumb as he might sound, even, for example, compared to someone who sometimes has a nugget of cocky of, you know, something clever to say, like even a Milo Yiannopoulos, the sticks and hammer thing will stick with his followers way more than the 5 minute long read Milo posted on Facebook.
Yeah, totally. Like, some of it reminds me of like cults indoctrination, where like, you know, they start watching a little bit, and like eventually they just like, they have this enormous endurance for just watching these things that like, I'm not even gonna screen that for anything, because like they win. I'm too bored watching that to like wait until minute, you know, 48 when they're like, actually, oh, Hitler heard some good points. Like, I mean, because it's just this like slow lead in. By the way, that's definitely going to be like excerpted, and someone's going to be like, tweet the audio of me saying that. Yeah, but like, it's just, if it's buried in enough like conversational stuff that people are willing to listen to because they're already his fans, yeah, I think it's really easy to push just increasingly extreme things like that.
Right. So let's, you know, we could go on forever on YouTube, but let's get back to, let's go back to Charlottesville, because yesterday was the DC rally. So Jason Kessler gets to his little, I'm sorry, how much time? You still have a little bit of time?
Oh yeah, I'm good.
Okay, cool. just wanted to check. Because I don't want to turn into one of those 3 hour long right wing live streams.
You might have a new you might have a new following of people who just like those 3 hour podcasts. Anyway,
right. Actually, I did notice that suddenly as we're starting to approach, a pretty not super long comparatively, but about the 40 minute mark, all of a sudden there's some right wing trolls in the YouTube feed.
Oh yeah,
it's almost like they're like flies to long streams. It's like they just see something going on for way too long, and they're like, "I'm gonna watch it. Nothing better to do."
I think that's like the motivating principle: is nothing better to do.
Right. Right. So Jason Kessler gets his little dozen or so, two dozen or so Nazis in this little area, cordoned off by police. And how did their rally go?
I mean, so this rally was supposed to go from 5:30 to 7:30 because they were in such a rush and they were being heckled by so many protesters. And, you know,
what would you put the number of protesters at?
I would say 1.5 to 2,000.
Wow.
It was a lot. Yeah. It was a large turnout. I think the reason I'm a little cagey about the numbers is because they weren't all in the same place at the same time.
Right.
There were multiple demonstrations going on. So there was like a queer dance party, which I didn't even see, but I saw awesome pictures from. And, you know, there was a significant black bloc, a few hundred of them, a lot of Black Lives Matter, a lot of people who just, you know, just normal people who just came out with signs. But yeah, anyway, so they were just sort of shipped into their little roped off area, and they let in like a few token media people. I was not among them. I was not interested. But yeah, it wrapped up in like, 45 minutes? Because Jason Kessler wanted all these speakers. You know, if you look at his permit application for the rally, he's like, I think I'm going to have Patrick Little, who's this neo-Nazi who, you know, tried running for Congress just to have a platform for neo-Nazism. David Duke, trying to think who else, but none of the big names showed because no one wants to be associated with this, you know? So it just turned into, you know, a few fringe wingnuts just kind of shouting up there about immigrants and everything. It's funny. Jason Kessler was like, I'm not a white nationalist. And standing right behind him was this guy holding like a sign about white genocide, which is not real. It's a meme about, you know, immigrants are going to replace us. And it's like, that's a white nationalist meme. It was fast and they got a police escort out and that was it. They got shipped back to the train station and got shipped back out to Virginia.
Before the official start time of their rally, right?
Before the official start time of the rally. They were out by, it was hard to tell because police actually had like a fake exit thing. They kind of made it look like they were going to exit and then they shipped them out the opposite way. I would put that around 4:55.
Right. And, you know, it's always, let me not bring up the police yet because I don't want to get to that quite yet. So let's, with Kessler and, you know, you brought up like David Duke and some of these guys, you know, it's something to remember actually while we're laughing at the ridiculousness of these actual people who showed up and the actual Unite the Right 2 rally and what a absolute failure it was. It's also important to remember that that's not really speaking to the actual amount of people that probably support them. And you brought it up, you know, there are, I think we actually talked about this last time you came on. There are your Nazis and white supremacists and white nationalists and racists who are completely dumb or uneducated, or maybe they don't even care when it comes to the media and how they're portrayed. And those are the guys that actually go out and have actual Nazi rallies and they're waving the swastika or whatever. And those usually don't really get much coverage. Now they do because, you know, the rise of it and all. But, you know, these have been going on for years and years and years. This isn't new. This didn't come with Trump. These guys were the guys who've always been out there. They've always been doing their rallies every year. And they've basically been ignored. But then you have these guys who have really risen in the age of Trump, who are very marketing savvy, very brand. They have brand awareness. They're like the I don't know the the Tim Ferriss of white supremacists, or the who's that guy who's always cursing up a storm on online now, whatever his name is, I can't remember. Gary Vaynerchuk of Nazis or whatever. That's what these guys are. They're aware of how they're going to be looked by the media, so that's why they try to say, "Oh no, I'm a nationalist who's white. I'm not a white supremacist. I'm not a Nazi." Like, right. You know, that's and they fool people that way. It works, because if it didn't, we wouldn't be talking about them right now.
Totally. And I think so. One thing to note is that, like, this rally was tiny, and it was tiny for a few reasons. It was tiny because Kessler has burned all his bridges with everyone. And it was tiny because I think the alt-right, like, as we know it, is kind of rebranding, or that maybe even that definition of, like, the alt-right as we conventionally understand it is maybe on the decline. But the underlying white supremacist and, like, white nationalist concepts, I think, are becoming more entrenched. You're just seeing them more on Fox News and in official policy than you are being shouted from a podium. So I think the savviest people after Unite the Right were the ones who kind of receded a bit. And the people who I'm thinking of two groups that I think have taken different approaches to this, but it's the same desired effect. One is a group called Identity Europa, which, you know, it's a white nationalist group. But they went from, they had a very violent founder. His successor had a long, you know, history of violence. And they kind of rebranded themselves like this clean cut, you know, college boys and khakis kind of thing. And it's like their base ideas are not any different. And they're just trying to be more presentable to the Republican Party. They're trying more entryist techniques, stuff like that. And then the other I can think of is the Proud Boys, which will tell you we can't be white nationalists because we have a lot of black people. And I think that's really interesting. I think the writer Brendan O'Connor did a really good job grappling with this after the Portland riots on the 4th, August 4th, where he spoke to people of color on the far right side. And I think it sort of traces to a fascist tradition that isn't so much rooted explicitly in whiteness, or, you know, not in the immediate sense. I think eventually it does lead to that, but finds its enemies in Muslims and immigrants. And of course, you know, if you look at, like, leaked Proud Boy chats, yes, there's a lot of racism in there. But it's something that some groups, I think, again, who are savvier with their branding, have kind of put on the back burner. I think that's probably smart, and it gives them some plausible deniability. But, you know, when you talk about what they actually believe and how they want to enforce it, then I think the true colors show a little bit.
Right, right. And speaking of the Proud Boys and Gavin McGinnis, they lost their Twitter accounts. Yeah. Shed a tear.
Yeah. The radical left-wing Twitter continues.
Right. Who, by the way, Alex Jones considers an ally. Jack Dorsey's an ally of his. Did you see that today on InfoWars? He was going through a list of the people. He said how, you know, this whole experience has showed me who's good and who's bad. And on the good side is Tucker Carlson, Laura Ingraham, and so far, Twitter CEO Jack Dorsey, he said. So congrats, Jack.
So many cool new friends. He's so popular.
So let's segue now. Maybe it's the perfect time to do this. Actually, there's two things here I just remembered. Let's first segue to the police and just really how they handle. We spoke about how they handled, you know, the militarization aspect of it, but how they've really became the private security force for the Unite the Right 2 rally goers. You really don't see this for any, like, I'm trying to think of, you know, Occupy Wall Street was probably the last time the left that I could think of held a regular event that wasn't a counter event to something, where I don't think they got any, when they were marching through the streets of Wall Street, I don't think the cops made sure that they had safe passageway through the streets of the financial district.
Yeah, and I mean, like, the most generous take I have on this is they probably did stop someone from, you know, rushing those guys, because they would. I mean, one Nazi chant, and I'm sorry, one chant was anytime, any place, punch a Nazi in the face. That was an Antifa chant yesterday. And, Yeah, so I think they had a reason to say, well, you know, there's an implied threat, and so for that reason, they're going to have a heavy security force. I get that. But all the same, it was incredibly striking. You know, they just, the detail for these 20 or so white nationalists was, it was, you know, maybe 40 police on bikes. You had cops in riot gear. You had police vans surrounding them on the way in. And I believe Jason Kessler said something on his way out. It was caught in a live stream. We're better protected than the president right now. And it really, yeah, I mean,
Hard to argue with.
it's in police's stated mission to prevent violence. And yet when you see just how aggressively it's deployed in favor of these guys, it's and to the extent that police were, you know, shoving journalists, were shoving protesters, it's really striking to see where the force comes out and when.
Right. And on a broader level, it's always been, and just not with the whites, it's with, you know, Republicans as a whole. It's super interesting to see the party in control, the winners, the people who are on top, act as if they are going against a force that you know, it's like Obama's still the president. It's like the Democrats are still in power the way they act. And you know, I think on a broader level, it's and this is why I'm bringing it up, because it brings the white supremacists into this. No matter how much the Republicans win, no matter if Trump's the president, if they control Congress, whatever, the world is changing, and they can't stop it. And that's why, no matter who's in power, they feel like they're losing, because they are, because they're not gonna be they're not gonna have their little whites only world anymore. And there's no deportation, no splitting families apart, no taking away the rights of marginalized groups, African Americans, their right to vote in this country. All those things that they're going to try to do to stifle that from happening, there's no stopping it. So they're seeing. They're losing no matter what. Like, so that's what I sort of been thinking of, you know, when I see this sort of reaction to, you know, how do you claim you're, when you have cops surrounding you and giving you private escort, how do you claim you're the ones who are there's a white genocide? Like, how do you say, like, you're the ones whose lives are in danger, whose, you know, the world is changing, you guys are still going to be safe even though you're not going to have all the power. These marginalized groups, unlike you, aren't advocating for your elimination, for your, or if you're just one of those white nationalist guys, for you just to somehow be peacefully shipped away from the country. I don't know how they imagine that happening, but you know, no matter what, you know, that's sort of how I think that's the dynamics here.
Yeah, totally. I mean, so much of it stems, I think, from just this fear of losing power, or maybe an unconscious recognition that, you know, their power is ill-gotten. If you're white, if you're a man, you have more inherent privileges. And I think people get very, very touchy when that's brought up, and even more touchy if it's, you know, the prospect of losing that, or, you know, having to cede that to someone else, even incrementally. They're terrified of that. And I think the Obama presidency was great for them because they had this vehicle of being like, this, you know, discreet enemy is gonna take away our thing, and they've got the power, and we're the rebels. And now that they are, you know, politically in power, it's really funny to see how they still try to cast it as a and it really just it comes down to the, you know, Tucker Carlson having a college student on who wrote an op-ed he didn't like about, you know, cultural appropriation at Oberlin or something like that. And so much of it distills into these culture wars because, in terms of, you know, actual, if you talk about ingrained power structures, it's yeah, you don't really have a leg to stand on.
Right. So before we go into Sargon of Akkad territory with time here, let's get to this thing that reporters are harping on. And that's apparently, like I wrote on Twitter, you know, it's almost like the narrative that the Jake Tappers of the world are coming out of this weekend with, is that the Antifa bullies are giving journalists wedgies and noogies. And that's the equivalent to Nazis terrorizing the streets.
I mean, I think so much of this comes from a there's a fundamental misunderstanding of what Antifa is, first of all. It means generally anti-fascist, and that movement has roots back, to the 1920s, European activists trying to shut out fascism in their own countries, sometimes unsuccessfully, like in Germany, sometimes successfully, like in Britain, where, anti-fascists brawled with fascists in their own streets, and hey, they won, but a lot of anti-fascist activists are not going to be the ones you see masked up, in full black bloc. Some are, but I think anti-fascist is a massively broad term, and it applies to so many people. To see that demonized is a bit frustrating, and I think very reductive.
Right.
In terms of like the tappers and everyone, like I personally have been covering marches and things like that since I was a college student, and I think it's very frustrating to see someone observe something on Twitter. Jake Tapper was responding to someone in a reporter in Charlottesville who got, who's like apparently filming an anti-fascist who said, hey, get that down, slap the phone down. The thing about anti-fascists is most of them do not want to be filmed. And there's legitimate reasons for that. First of all, most people don't want to be filmed. Like if you go out and you do man on the street reporting, no one likes a journalist. Like I'm a journalist, I get it. But they don't want to be filmed because they are frequently targets of far right doxing and violence. I know people personally that has happened to. They've been identified and had their personal information spread in neo-Nazi forums. And also, there is a risk of state violence. We talk about DC on January 20th, 2017. A whole bunch of activists and some non-activists, some journalists, some observers got swept up into this mass arrest. And the reason a lot of them were indicted for having done nothing wrong, they were all acquitted, was because they marched with this black bloc and they were associated with each other.
Right.
So there's a good reason people do not want to be identified. I am, my feeling on it is this. I'm a reporter. I'm going to take pictures of the crowd, like, but you do need to do kind of a gut check and be like, okay, if I take this picture, what is the news value and what is the risk to the people in it? And I think one way to mitigate all of this narrative, which is I spent all weekend like bumping into anti-fascists and never had any issue with them. Part of the problem, I think, is journalists are just scared of anti-fascists. Like they won't interview them. We get 100 think pieces on like why we should actually talk to the Nazis, these humanizing narratives, but people won't go and interview. And I went and in some of my stories, I have quotes from, masked Black Bloc people because they're people. And if you're a journalist, your job is to at least make a good faith effort to engage with them. Say, hey, my phone's down, but what do you think about this? And you lead into it. Can I talk to you? Can I ask you a few questions? And listen, you know that probably they don't want their picture taken. If they're in public, it is your right as a journalist to do it. But you need to understand why they don't and, how they might react. And I've seen literally about two documented instances of anti-fascists slapping people's phones down. And sure, they shouldn't do that. But I mean, that's happened to me with all stripes of people.
Right. I mean, it's I remember during to bring up Occupy again, Tim Pool, who was someone who during Occupy was this independent journalist extraordinaire. Like he was like how the people were talking about he was going to be the because he was live streaming it, which was something that was really like new ground the way he was doing it then, like really like just like hours and hours long of these protests he was live streaming, and he I remember now of course he is very friendly with the fascists, he is a friend to the fash, and it's that's another story right there. Tim Pool's weird decline into being buddy buddy with the Cassandra Fairbanks and the that whole group. Yeah, I don't get it at all. But I remember one weird bizarre thing about him that made me question him early on was he had this need, this want to catch Antifa doing something wrong or illegal or whatever. Like if he saw like if there was a march. Police marching along with protesters, kettle like the those orange kettle things being like like almost like a being pulled from police and like something happening there, like something to document. He'll see like a couple of anti-fascists or Black Bloc, I should say, probably to be more specific, like popping a car tire and think that's the what he should go and document. And then he would, of course, get shit from them because they don't want to be caught on camera doing that. And again, when I say popping a tire, it was probably like from memory, probably like a cop car or something, not like some like regular citizen's vehicle, like sitting there to mess with someone's day or whatever, not anything like that. But you know, like it's like, why are you? It's almost like they want this side story of you know, we're really down the and to get away from Tim Pool and talk about the Jake Tappers. It's like we're down the middle. We tell it how it is. This whole bullshit where we can't take sides. So they feel like almost like, well, there's a bunch of Nazis. That's one side. We need to make ourselves seem like we're down the middle and not taking sides. What's the other side's evil? And for some reason they think it's not wanting to be on camera from the Antifa protesters.
Yeah, I mean, it's really weird. I mean, I automatically have suspicion about people who say, yes, there's a Nazi march, but I think a lot of it plays to, listen, a lot of anti-fascists are anarchists or they're on the far left, something like that. And those are ideologies that a lot of centrists who, you know, are a lot of pundits are very centrist. They're quite uncomfortable with that. But I think you just have to understand what anti-fascists are responding to when you talk about, oh, no, like someone fired a flare. You know, I was standing next to someone who fired a flare. It was fine and it took 2 seconds. They're responding to the quote unquote free speech rally 30 feet away, which is advocating for things that, if enforced, are genocidal. There is an inherent violence that they're responding to, and you can criticize the optics of it. And listen, I am not for shoving anyone. I'm not for shoving journalists except my personal enemies in the bar. But it's not a you have to understand that this is not an unprompted action. It's part of a larger context of violence, but you don't notice the other side of the violence because it's largely in policy issues, or it's after the rally, after the police go home in the parking lot when a fascist, throws a punch at someone who's heckling him.
Right. And, there's certain journalists I'd be okay with the shoving. All right. Yeah. I mean,
I'm going to leave it there.
I mean, just to be completely, just to even take it on a legit like example here, I was once very recently documenting an event, reporting on an event, and another journalist, a photographer, was angry that I got in his way for his perfect shot or whatever, and proceeded to hold his hand in front of my camera and hold it down for like way longer than would have been okay if I actually hurt his feelings or whatever.
Well, so, if he was in Black Bloc, he would have got a CNN story about that. So it's
right. Maybe we should look at the fascists in the photography journal, the photojournalist.
Yeah, I mean, listen, it's just in complex situations, stuff happens. It's
right,
not okay,
right.
But it's minor, and right. You have to understand the context in which it happens.
Right. Kelly Weil of the Daily Beast. Follow her at Kelly Weil on Twitter. Read all of her stuff on Daily Beast. I mean, especially one of the great things I just read from you. Two of them I want to name drop, actually, we didn't talk about here, was the article you wrote about these three guys in that militia group who were given orders to from high up in the hierarchy of these groups to do bad things at synagogues and not synagogues, mosques and other places. Just and then your look at how the far right is using Bitcoin to raise their money, which, by the way, to actually bring into here, because we're talking about Jason Kessler, he is not one of the more successful guys when it comes to Bitcoin.
Yep, you can see their wallets, and he's not doing great.
Not doing. I don't really think he's in the. I don't think he's making even $100 on Bitcoin. Thank you so much for joining us, Keller.
Thank you for having me.
Have a good night. Bloop. All right, everybody. Let's go to the comments here. It is super hot in this apartment right now. It is really humid in New York today. And I put the AC off because I don't want that AC hum. And where my AC is located will require me to leave this camera and just be awkward. So we're just gonna, I'm gonna power through in my, you could see the glistening of my, the sweat drops as it pours down my forehead. As my face turns red, which it wasn't this red when we started. I'm just like slowly melting away. Let's go to the YouTube comments here. Rest in peace, Jim the Anvil Neidhart. Yes. I hope Raw, Monday Night Raw right now is doing a nice package for him. My condolences to the Hart family. This is wrestling stuff, folks. You know, you don't get a doomed episode without some sort of wrestling evidence. My condolences to the Hart family, to his daughter, Natty Neidhart. And, you know, it's. I remember when I was young, the Hart Foundation was one of my favorite stables, my favorite groups. Brian Pillman, Owen Hart. Owen Hart was one of my all-time favorites. British Bulldog, Jim the Anvil Neidhart, and Bret Hart. And out of that list, the five members of the Hart family, the Hart Foundation, I should say, only Bret Hart is still alive. And it's not like they're old. Brian Pillman died, I believe, what, in his 30s maybe? Maybe early 40s latest? And then British Bulldog died early. And Owen Hart, of course, that's tragic fall in his 30s. And now Jim the Anvil Neidhart, you know. It's sad, man. Sad. SummerSlam Sunday. Bryce Jacobson, who seems to be our resident right winger today, is going off talking about how New York is humid. Bad Idea Society saying I should watch some sports entertainment to cool me off. That's what I'll be doing right after we're off. I've got it on the DVR. I'll probably jump into it live and then catch what I missed after it's over. If you want to know how I watch my wrestling. Very important to know, right? You guys might have noticed that I started early today. It will be a rare opportunity to catch a 8 p.m. weeknight episode of Doomed. The kid is out with his mom tonight. And a little bit past his bedtime. So I decided I'll start a little bit early. See how a 8 p.m. Stream does. Doesn't matter how well it does because I'll never be doing an 8 p.m. stream again, probably. We'll probably be back on our weekend slot or our late night, 9 p.m. to 10 p.m., anywhere in between hour. Sometimes I'm sure we'll be even going later, 11 maybe. Start time, I should say. Do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do. A lot of comments. I'm not going to be able to get to these all because I'm going to have to go back in the feed. I'm not going to be able to... I see a lot of people. Oh, I saw that Theo was when we were talking about the height of these guys before I name dropped up. Not name dropped doesn't make any sense. Before I dropped my height, he said, "Don't want no short short." And then he realized that I'm short. And then he goes, "Ooh, Sept Binder, my B." And then Tim Lampasona says Ben Shapiro is 3'11". I hope he is because then I'm not Ben Shapiro's height. I'm right between 5'4", 5'5". And I'm fine with, I have no problem with it. Yeah, that's unlike some people, like Ben Shapiro, I guess, who is very, very self-conscious, I heard, about his five. Ben, buddy, you got to embrace it. You got to just, listen, it's who you are, man. As Lady Gaga says, baby, you were born this way. Just take it, baby, man. You're 5'4", Ben. Own it. Dissident Peasant is very upset I'm not following him on Twitter. Listen, buddy, I don't do the follow back thing. You gotta earn my follow. I'll probably follow you. I'm just joking. I'm not a big timer like Michael. Like I said, look, you, if you're in the Discord, remember Patreon subscribers, patreon.com/MattBinder. If you're in that Patreon, if you're subscribed to Patreon, you're in that Discord channel. I'm in there. I'm not as active as I'd like to be because I've been busy. I've got the job at Mashable, reporting on stuff, and then I've got the Cynthia stuff going on. That's really picking up. But I'm in there, and I'm not like Michael, who's got a schedule of Q&A. Drop something in there, and I'll get to it within 24 hours. That's the MattBinder promise. That's the doomed guarantee. We got some jokes about Nazi busting and flagpole sitting from 10-foot man when we were talking about Jason Kessler's not understanding what you need to put a flag together. We got some good Gavin content in it. Listen, you can go to doom.tv, which will direct you straight to the live of the YouTube channel, the Doomed YouTube channel, which is actually, it's not technically the Doomed YouTube channel. It's my old YouTube channel, as was pointed out to me on Twitter just before. I'm still my 2008 avatar when I'm clean shaven, wearing a army camouflage trucker hat with my hood up, looking super skate punk esque. Literally 10 years old now, that photo is. It's the YouTube channel I set up just for my stuff, just Matthew Binder, just to, you know, when I was setting up YouTube, someone on YouTube had Matt Binder first. Can you believe that? Yeah, but if you go to doom.tv, you'll be directed straight to that YouTube channel. No need to know the YouTube username. And subscribe, go to this live stream, record the replay, and the comments will pop up as you watch. You can see these comments. We got some kind words for Bryce Jacobson when he first came into the chat. From Brian Arguello. I'm sorry if I pronounced that wrong. What a little keyboard warrior. Go beat off to black gang bang porn, you little Nazi. I don't think we have to go there, but... we don't have to... We can make these guys feel foolish in other ways. Let's see. I'm gonna go to the most recent stuff here. I see some people were talking about how they are upset they missed my Majority Report years. Somehow, and you know, this is shocking to me. I'm at the Majority Report for 5 years, almost 5 full years. Still, I was at the Majority Report longer than anybody else, even currently, except for Sam Cedar, the host of the show, in the online iteration. I don't know about the Air America version. I'm sure also Janine Garofalo has been that would was years surpass mine, but for. Somehow, I leave in late 2015 because got this opportunity with Blake Zeff wants to bring me, politics editor of Salon, wants to bring me aboard his new startup cafe. It's a good opportunity. Sam encourages me to take it because, you know, there's only so high at the time I could have gone with the, you know, the show was small and, you know, the membership funding was good for a show like that. But, you know, we sort of were at a point where Sam felt even, you know, this is an opportunity, take it. So I go. And somehow, because it's 2016, Majority Report blows up to we got 3,000 concurrent people watching it on YouTube every day. And I missed out, apparently. 5 years there, and nobody knows who I am. And Michael Brooks got his Michael Brooks show. Looks like, you know, Jamie Peck's great. Matt Leck is great. Love all these new people who are there. They're great. But apparently, more people are familiar with their Majority Report stuff than my Majority Report stuff. My 5 years of Majority Report content. There was a regular bi-weekly episode of the show called Matt and Mike Mondays. It's unbelievable to me. Is there a Matt Leck and Michael Brooks Mondays? Is there a Jamie Peck and Michael Brooks Fridays? No. When Michael hosts the show, it's just majority report with Michael Brooks. It should be. Someone should tell Michael Brooks to stop hogging the spotlight. And just like I got in there in the title, it should be whenever it's Sam's not there and it's Michael and Jamie or Michael and Matt or Michael and Brendan, who I don't believe I've met yet. Same with Jamie. I don't think I've met her either. They should. There should be a workers' movement to get them up there. I want Jamie and Michael Monday. I want Matt Leck and Michael Monday. Can't be Matt and Michael Monday. That's already taken. I'm sorry, Matt Leck. Oh. I went there. That's right. I went there. Now, it's all in good fun. I like messing with Michael Brooks. That's really what that was all about. But it would actually really make me happy for a lot of people watching this watch Majority Report. Start a movement. I want emails going into majorityreporters@gmail.com right now requesting that when Michael hosts the show, whoever's on the other end, whether Jamie's there or Matt, whatever, it's not the Majority Report hosted by Michael Brooks, would fill in host Michael Brooks. I want a Jamie and Michael, insert the day of the week here. I want a Matt Leck and Michael, insert the day of the week here. Those guys deserve it. And those people up top like Michael Brooks must stop holding the workers down. Guy's got over 1,000 Patreon subscribers. And he can't, and on the show that isn't his, he can't give one of the other producers that marquee. Unbelievable, that guy. Unbelievable. And happy birthday, Michael Brooks. Yes, that's right. Thanks, Dad, for pointing that out. I'm gonna choke. Really weird, actually. Excuse me. Really, really weird, actually. August 13th is also actually the birthday of two guys who were in my punk band back in high school and college. And then Michael Brooks. It was like, you know, all of my good friends seem to be born on August 13th. Weird how that works out. And my birthday, by the way, is 10 days later, August 23rd. August is just a good month, folks. That's just how it is, a good month. If you're born in August, you're special. Very special. Except for Michael Brooks. He just happens to be born in August. I've lost my place now. I don't even know where I am in the comments. I'm sorry. And now we just got a bunch of people talking shit about Michael Brooks, which I love. Let's just go another five minutes on his birthday. You know, it's his birthday. He'll cry if he wants to. Let's make those. You know, I'm gonna get a cup. I'm gonna get a mug. I'm gonna buy myself a mug, and instead of liberal tears or snowflake tears or whatever, it's gonna be the tears of Michael Brooks, and I will drink those every episode. Let's see. Dissident Peasant has many fond memories of Binder on MR. Thank you. Interesting. I really do think like I wasn't my MR days. They had its moments, but I wasn't that good. I think I peaked after MR. I really came into my own. I had to leave under Sam's shadow and Michael Brooks's constant need for the spotlight to come onto my own. And I think Cafe, I did, and then Further, and then after that, Mashable now and just doing my own thing with Doomed, and I got some, you know, I got some other things in the works that I hopefully can tell you guys about. That's just my own stuff, and then of course the you know the Cynthia stuff. You know, I needed to leave Majority Report. That's it is what it is. What needed to happen happened. Binder, Dissident Pestilent was Binder was like the pop culture online guy. Michael nor Sam don't know nothing about that. More like Matt Bitter, says Theo Dillon. Theo, I don't know why I just said your last name. You're known just as Theo here. No, it's not Bitter. It's just, you know, just the way things happen. It's amazing to watch. Just fun to watch. I'm very happy that they've grown to as big as they've grown. Should invite me on the show a little bit more so I could promote my podcast. That's all. Would it kill Sam? Hey, instead of texting me going, hey, I'm going on Chris Hayes' show to talk about QAnon. Got any info for me? How about, hey, I'm going on Chris Hayes' show to talk about QAnon. Also, you should come on my show. Eh. Would that kill him? I hope he listens to this. Tim Lampasona, Jamie and Matt's shows are both excellent. But to be fair, you discovered Weird Mike. I did. Yes, that's true. I'll always have that. Bad Idea Society. Is an MR network a possibility in the future? No, because, you know, I don't know about Sam. But I know Michael, like we've discussed in the show before, with his scheduled Q&As, his scheduled appearances. Next, he'll be doing signings at the local Best Buy. He's big time now. He's got that Patreon money. And you know, what would he gain from hooking up with a little guy like me? Sure, he'll give me some breadcrumbs by inviting me on the show once in the year the Michael Brooks show has existed. Sure. But yeah, so I don't think there'll be an MR network in the future. Yeah. No. Don't look at me as to the reason, by the way. Ah, 10 foot man, you are responsible for Sam's understanding of the men going their own way thing. I can't even take that credit because I still don't think Sam understands it. Edward Norton still watches old MR videos with Matt. Thank you. Dissident Peasant with the best comment I've ever heard in my life. TMBS, the Michael Brooks show is good, but an MR clone. Well. Bad Idea Society, I think Matt had his finger on the pulse of the pop culture element of the right-wing disinformation campaign. You know, if this is just going to turn into stroking my ego, then I will be on here all night. We'll just read comments. We will turn into a Sargon of Akkad. Excuse me, now I got the hiccups. Running out of water. But we'll turn into a Sargon of Akkad live stream. We'll go 6, 7, 8 hours if it's just me reading off wonderful things about me. Bryce Jacobson, like a baby, I have to put myself to bed. Good night, Bryce. I do appreciate, even though you seem to be a troll or a right winger, I appreciate you in here. I appreciate you watching the show. I hope you come back. I hope you listen to the show. I hope you are in the comments again. I hope you are on the live stream again. And if you can't do that, at the very least, I hope you download the podcast. Bad Idea Society, he should have divested from pro wrestling when WWE was bought up. Nobody's perfect. Dissident Peasant, yes, MR clone is its own thing. It borrows lots from Sam, but is its own thing. Let's not give Michael too much credit. Michael is a capitalist confirmed, says Kami. Yeah. That's who Candace Owens should be going out at. Not Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. She should be calling out Michael Brooks' fake socialism. By the way, listen, Candace Owens, if you need a socialist, a leftist to debate, I will accept your challenge. $100,000. I'll give you my Venmo username. You can send me the money. let's do this. I'm accepting the challenge. And if you don't debate me, why are you afraid? This is all about the marketplace of ideas, right? I'm entering the marketplace. Let's battle it out. I'm open. Debate, Owens, debate. That's to be read, by the way, as the Kevin Owens, fight slogan. Catchphrase. Debate, Owens, debate. She's not going to see this or listen to this, obviously, but I'm gonna go on that. I'm going to go on, continue with that on Twitter. Debate, Owens, debate. Do it. Debate me. Dissident Peasant, tomorrow is Social Security's birthday. Be sure to call Papa Sam and wish him a good one. Right, if there's anything that Sam Cedar loves more than his own kids, I think. It's Social Security. All right. He loves himself. He loves himself some Social Security talk. Tim Lempisona, majority port turns normies into lefties. Bad idea, society. Michael's a socialist except for sneakers. Then he insists on maximum human suffering to go into the creation of said sneakers. The Michael Brooks Show, leftist education. Dissident peasant, goddamn Binder. Cold-blooded. I'm not sure what you're talking about, but I'm sure it's something one of the various things I just said. Tim Palampasona. So, Majority Report turns normies into lefties. The Michael Brooks Show is leftist education, and Doomed is leftist shitposting. I'll take it. It really narrows my audience compared to the other two, but I'll take it. Because it makes me sound cooler than the other two. Kamkami, Nike Gulag. Bryce Jacobs saying Nike is capo, you, I don't even know. Dissident peasant, right on, dude. You're your own thing and it's good shit. Keep on keeping on. Thank you. Kamkami, Matt is secretly plotting a revolution. Maybe. Theo, I said sir. Jesse Cool, Binder Wrestling Wednesdays. Theo, a former producer of mine. I still can't believe, did I talk about this last time? I think I did. I still can't believe he went on Chris Hayes' show and said a former producer of mine. And I didn't see it yet, but apparently he said a former associate producer of mine? Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? I never had that title. I was a producer that whole time. I have literal proof I was producer. The guy wrote me was my reference and said I was producer. What kind of downplaying is that? Unbelievable. Couldn't even drop my name on MSNBC. Dissident peasant, Binder, I'll hook up with you. this is fun. Yeah, a 10-foot man. Matt, I sent you a message about how Sam on MSNBC came within an inch of mentioning your name, giving you the credit you deserve. Someone sent me the video clip of that. I hope it's still out there. I think it should be. But I want that clip. I really want that clip. It should be out there. Please get that to me. Theo, TYT turns normies into MR listeners. Bad idea to say there's a bunch of stuff about Social Security. Yes. Sam is obsessed with Social Security, but it's worth it. That's what I'm not mocking that. I just think it's funny that, you know, old man Cedar is very cliche in his in his beat, I guess I could say. All right, ladies and gentlemen, there's a lot of things you could clip from this show today. And actually, if you want to spread any of this around, I think I was on fire, according to someone, when I went on my YouTube rant. If anyone wants to clip that, I would appreciate that. If anyone wants to clip my Michael Brooks and Sam Cedar critiques and my promotions of Jamie and Matt and Brendan, not to really post that one publicly like the YouTube one, but you know, to send over to Sam and Michael and the MR guys, I would appreciate that too. Patreon.com/Matt Binder. Still stuck in that Patreon purgatory. We are one review away. We're at over 100 reviews total, but we on iTunes. We were one iTunes review away from five 100 star five from 100, I should say. Excuse me. 100 five-star iTunes ratings. I feel good about that. I really do. Subscribe to this YouTube channel if you haven't already. Tell people to subscribe to this YouTube channel if you haven't already. Somehow I am under 1,000 subscribers. Yet the Michael Brooks Show, who was at the same number as me a couple of weeks ago, is now at under just under 5,000 subscribers. Again, the fallout from me leaving before the 2016 election and getting all those sweet, sweet, sweet YouTube views from the explosion of the Majority Report, thanks to Bernie Sanders, Hillary Clinton, and Donald Trump. I assume that's why. Jeez, God. Unbelievable. Really. Couldn't have had my kid just a year later. All right. Bad Idea Society. I still don't understand what Cafe is or was. Yeah, it was. We actually did some really good stuff when we were there, and it's pivoted to basically Preet Bharara's media network. He's got his podcast, and then Bassem Youssef's got a podcast there now. No one I know has anything to do with it anymore, in terms of who is working there. When I, not to downplay those two podcasts at all, but it's not the same product anymore, is what I'm saying. Everyone who worked with me there, Rob Wissman, Boring as Heck, who both from the Go Off Kings, Todd Dracula, Brianna Haney, Lev Novak, Blake Zeff, all those wonderful people have moved on to doing different things. Some completely new company, new companies, others still within the parent company of Cafe, but working for a different website. Cool. So that's just the little insider stuff there. Here, I'll end with this. Bad Idea Society. Hear me out, Matt. YouTube links are trash. Say, follow me on my YouTube channel, Matt Binder. The links sometimes suck. That's why you can just go to doomed.tv. No, you don't have to put in YouTube. I have the domain name doomed.tv. Don't have to type HTTP colon slash none of that. Don't have to type any of that. Doomed.tv, where you type your URL in the browser, and that will forward you straight to YouTube. There's no site it takes you to, no landing page. No, it'll take you straight to the YouTube channel. Much easier than youtube.com slash user slash whatever or whatever. Or even just go to youtube.com and put in a Google search, the YouTube search, I should say, for Mapinder. None of that. Doomed.tv. Can't get any easier. Well, maybe if. I don't know how it could get any easier. I'm sure it could, though. All right, everybody. See you next time on Doomed.